His name is David Luke Flatman, Commander of the Armies of the West, General of the Somerset Regions, loyal servant to the true Emperor, Thomas George Llewellyn Shanklin, father to a noisy cat, husband to a vegan, and he will have a salad in this life or the next. It's time for Flats and Shanks.
Ready? Is everyone ready?
Yep, ready.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of our weekly, pretty much weekly podcast, Flats and Shanks. I am David Flatman.
All right, Dave.
Okay, who are you?
Yeah, they know who I am.
Who are you?
We do this every week. This is the second series.
How are you, fella?
Good, how are you?
All right, lad.
Yeah, where are we? Tell them where we are.
We're at the Principality, pal.
Formerly the...
Millenniminum.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm only calling it Principality because of who else is in the room. I've been calling it Millenniminum ever since it changed to Principalitum.
What was it before Millenniminum?
It was... Wasn't here, was it? It was Cardiff Arms Park.
Yes, well done.
Yeah.
Well done.
But was this actually Cardiff Arms Park? No, because that was the Blues.
No, it was. It's just turned around. The picture's turned around a bit. It's redeveloped, but... Where you're looking is where Jim Shanklin played. Think about that.
Yeah,
take that in for a minute.
Dot, dad of Tom. I thought the Cardiff Blues ground was Cardiff Farmers Park.
It is.
They both are.
It is also. Yeah, yeah. So there we are.
And he played there about 15 times.
Is it the first time here or not?
No.
Okay.
No. Probably. Probably. 12th.
Have you ever played here?
Yeah.
Knew it.
Yeah, ask if we won.
Do you win?
Why don't you introduce our guest?
Okay. So, right, this is off the top of my head now. I hope I get this right. Played for Newport, one game. Bridgend, Celtic Warriors, Ospreys, Wales, Lions, and Bristol. 75 caps for his country.
Jeez, that's a lot.
2 tries. Great ratio,
that's
that.
Not a lot. I think Paul James has got a better ratio than that.
3 Grand Slams. 05, 08, and 12, which puts him...
Same as Ireland.
Yes. Puts him in a bracket of Gethin Jenkins, Adam Jones, Gerald Davis, Gareth Edwards, and JPR. The only people to ever win 3 Grand Slams.
Yeah.
It is Ryan Jones. Ryan.
Hello.
Welcome.
Welcome. Well, so I put
well actually, we're in your house.
And you're in my house, yeah. And welcome to the Principality.
Nice office.
Here's offices go, it's not bad.
Yes, no. Is this where you do most of your work, in the boxes?
Yeah, you're staring at the window most days, yeah.
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 Not bad view, mine, is it?
Nice little setup. I always, on your introduction, well done, Tom.
Thank you. Is that right? Is that right to start with?
Yeah, it was right.
Yeah. Lions in 05, and then you went in 09, but you had a bit of a bang on the head, didn't you, before... Concussion became what it is now.
Yeah, technically, I've been on 2 tours. My last one, my 2 Lions tours.
I say
tours.
2 as well, yeah.
The second tour lasted about 14 hours. So after shortly arriving in South Africa, saw a South African neurosurgeon who deemed me not fit, and I was on the same BA flight out of South Africa that I'd arrived on.
No.
12 hours earlier, yeah.
I mean, to be fair, if you...
Got a load of kit, mate.
I didn't know that. Oh, you got
rugby,
a stash?
Typical rugby flat.
Did you get a tour fee?
No, I didn't. Oh, and I did actually get an iPod and iPad and laptop as well.
Oh, you got all that gear?
Well, I did, and I was driving out of the hotel in the taxi, and the kit man came running after me and took the iPad and
no!
the laptop off
oh,
me.
Oh, no!
Kept the kit, though.
Reg, was it? Reg, the kit man.
Yeah. Oh, Reg, yeah.
The worst thing is that, you know, if he got a neurosurgeon to have a look at his head now, he'd still be deemed unfit, so...
Yeah, oh, Tommy.
Boom, boom. Oh, you still got it, Shanks.
That's what you get.
You still got it.
You such an old bugger. I tell you, well, in the go World on, Cup us. In 03 that England won... I wasn't there, I was watching the telly.
But England won a World Cup, yeah.
They won a World Cup.
Oh, right. Can't remember.
Christ. Yeah, they dicked everyone. And so Danny Grewcott got picked on that and got injured halfway through, and they brought out Simon Shaw, and they were like, Danny, can you do us a favour and just leave your... Don't have to leave your kit, but can you leave all of your number ones, please, in the wardrobe? Because Shawsy's literally taking your bedroom tonight, and can you get out, please? You need to be out by 12. He's like, right, okay. But leave your suit in the cupboard because Shawsy will take it. Now, Danny's 6'6". Shawsy's 6'8 or 6'9".
Yeah,
so he's got these swingers on. He has to wear Gruy's swingers suits. Are terrible. Come home and they go and meet the Queen for a parade. And Shawsy's arranged new trousers, but they don't come. So he turns up in a pair of swingers. Dan hasn't got a suit, but he would played at the World Cup. So he goes on the thing with his injury. But they turn up, they got a suit for him. But I forget whose suit it was. It was someone else's suit who basically was like Richard Hill's spare suit. So Shawsey and Gruy are walking around. You can see their ankles. They're meeting the Queen. You can see their ankles and their shins.
Do you remember one of the games for Wales, and Gethin Jenkins wasn't playing, and he watched the game in his house. But after all the boys went out into town with their suits on, their team suits, he got dressed into his team suit to come out
the boys. So he could get the pats on the
John
back.
John Terry. John Terry.
Before John Terry.
Did he really do that?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, because he needs a bit more acclaim, doesn't he, Melon? He's struggling for caps.
Well, he needs all the help he can get, though, doesn't he?
True enough.
So what are you up to now, then? Now you've retired.
Crikey. Can I just go back, actually, to my introduction? There's a couple of things you missed.
Excellent.
I did win Wales' the Sexiest Man as well.
Did you?
To admit. Yeah,
what
yeah.
year?
2007, I think it was.
How was your hair back then? Was it long?
I was in that mid-long phase. But just put in some context.
Bon Jovi.
I think when Evans was fifth, that year, you know, the fat guy of Google.
Yeah. So it's not like when Shanks was voted in the top five ugliest people at the 2003 World Cup. That was a serious one.
It wasn't ugly. It was players that could do better.
Okay, so ugly. So yours was a bit of fun. His was serious.
Yeah, funny enough, you got voted in the World Cup after that as well, didn't you?
Two in a row, yes.
World Ugly 15.
Yeah.
I think you were captain as well.
He was every year.
And he was head coach.
They picked me over Neil Jenkins.
Mate, if I'd been at a World Cup, I'd have been in it.
I once had someone. Remember we used to play up in Wrexham? You used to have the odd game up in Wrexham.
I bashed you at Wrexham in that
day
game.
Yeah. I remember stretching behind the post, and it was a game Neil Jenkins was playing as well. It was against Romania, and they were shouting to me, Neil. They thought, honestly, it's a low point in my career. But
why? Why is that, mate? I don't get it.
Scored a try, so it's all right.
What's wrong with Neil Jenkins?
Anyway, so what are you doing now?
What am I doing now? Yeah. So I am one of seven execs of the Welsh Rugby Union, and I head up participation. So I do everything grassroots rugby, everything outside of the professional game, really.
So you work for Rhys Williams?
No, Rhys Williams makes tea for me.
Okay, that's right.
So
that's better.
And basically, after he's finished sort of just wandering around the office in painted on jeans and
super tight shirt, chest out.
Super tight shirt. I mean, he hasn't really got the body for it anymore. He's a bit puffy and rubbery.
He used to look, for a while after he retired, he looked like he was buff and still putting the effort in, and he's gone downhill. Not like Shanks, me and you. Shanks, you and I are just getting better and better with age. He looks terrible.
He looks awful, and you know, he's obviously a bit comfortable. He's got a couple of kids now, isn't he? And he's settled into the good life, isn't he? Too much cheese.
She ain't going nowhere. I can do what
that's the thing when you're really good looking, when you're young, it's not always going to stay with you. And you are going to turn whilst if you like.
They're not swans like us, are they?
No,
that's it.
You know, I age rapidly to start with, but now I'm just levelling off.
Yeah. The thing is, you will look 43 until you're 63. Same here.
Yeah. Correct.
Except it's 48 till 63.
So, how's it going then? Looking after participation. I mean, sounds like it's a job that you're not ever going to please everyone.
It's more than a job, mate. It's, you know, you thought playing was massive. Look, rugby's emotive for a lot of people in Wales, isn't it? You know, so it's what they do in their pastime. It's in the fabric of who we are and what we do. So we've got issues around our sport like all the other governing bodies as well. You know, it's just keeping rugby current, making it really attractive to young parents, young kids, boys and girls.
Yeah.
And sort of making rugby modern, if you like, you know, because, you know, it's not just about 15 a side for blokes on a Saturday afternoon anymore. It's got to be rugby clubs and our game itself has got to be more inclusive, more attractive, because there's more choice. You know, when we grew up, you did rugby and football, or went out on your bike if you were lucky enough to have one, or you've just stolen one. Whereas now kids can do anything you see on telly within 5-10 miles of your doorstep. You can do anything.
It's so true. My little girls go to school in Bath, and the stuff they do at school, there's gardening club, there's all this stuff, there's kickboxing, there's cheerleading, there's AmDram, there's cross country, there's track sprint, there's everything. Every sport you can imagine, as well as the normal ones, but they could do three sports a day. And when we were at school, it just wasn't like that. You did the sport that was the term sport. So you played rugby, or you played football, then you played cricket. Or if you're like me, you ate while everyone else played cricket. But there was very little choice, was there?
Yeah, and it's not just the choice for sports anymore either. You know, we've seen there's a massive emergence of digital technology, and you know, people are choosing not to be active first and foremost, let alone choosing a sport. So, you know, we've got all these sorts of issues, but it's a really exciting opportunity, really, for us to sort of reposition the game to make sure, you know, what got us to this point over the last 140 years is certainly not going to get us to the next 140 years.
So a lot of travelling. So you're about all over Wales.
Yeah, I've seen parts of Wales I never knew existed.
Are you like David Brent? Have you just got like five cleanly dry clean shirts, iron shirts lined up in the back of your car, like five jackets, five shirts,
selling tampons to rugby clubs and stuff?
So, what?
What?
Wow.
What?
Have you not seen that in the office?
No.
He's a daughter. He's a salesman, isn't he? And he's doing. He's
oh, going and he's around. He's actually selling tampons.
And
right
at the end, he goes, just out of interest, who does your tampons? Never seen that in the office. It's a quote.
I can't remember that.
Yeah, I wasn't being serious, mate.
You've got to get out more, Shanks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I am all over the place. I've been up and down North Wales, West Coast, I went up the East. I've been all over the place, which has been great as well. So you've got to see and do things, meet new people. Because, you know, one thing that we're rugby people here, you know, the one thing that we have all got in common is we got to love this game, really.
And obviously, you know, the W are quite clever in recruiting Ryan, because it's quite a tough job, but he goes in there and you can't really have a go at him, can you?
No, not really.
You know, you can't.
Not with a face like this.
Three Grand Slams, Captain Wales, 2008 Grand Slam.
But it's like there are loads of great players that wouldn't get that gig. Like the RFU couldn't give your gig to Austin Healey. They couldn't give it to him. Because even though he's a really good bloke, he's built a persona where people, their default position is to disagree with him and have a go at him, even if they agree with him. Like same as Brian Moore, like they just people just habitually disagree, even though if they agree. But Ryan's not like that, is he?
Would we have anyone like that in Wales that is so controversial that people?
Who was that? Who was that journalist who ripped into the Wales boys? Was it last year? Or
Delmi?
Delmi? Yeah,
Delmi.
Delmi Parfitt.
Yeah, he sometimes gets a little bit drunk and starts tweeting stuff. and then he deletes it all straight away.
Panic.
Yeah.
In the morning, we've all been there.
Absolutely ripped into the boys. I forget what he called them, but Waste of Space or something like that, allegedly. I can't remember.
I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, but he might not get that job, but I'm sure he's a nice man when he's not had a beer. But any players like that, you reckon?
I'm trying to think of any. Like, Gav is just misunderstood.
Yeah, Gav's lovely, aren't
he? Yeah, he wasn't controversial by his actions or what he said, was he, Gav? He's like a Marmite character. Yeah. You create a perception about him. But
he looked like he was doused in Marmite.
Yeah. But, you know, Gav now is a different guy to what Gav when he plays as well. You know, he's a real different character. But
No.
There's no one I played who, apart from you, that we're all hugely disliked. Or
we're all incredibly humble here, so grounded.
Got no choice, have you?
Yeah.
Not really. So, is it a fun job? Is your job fun?
Yeah, it's well. Like I said, I really, really enjoy it. But you'd have to, because it is more than a job. It's all encompassing. And but like I said, the exciting thing for me is the opportunity with it. You know, there's a real to give a bit back and have a bit of an impact on what rugby looks like for the future. Now, rugby was great to me and my family, really. And you know, I think we've got a duty to give a bit back, not just take like Shanks does.
Yeah, correct.
So,
So Ryan doesn't get paid for this either. I forgot to mention.
I've got three kids and I've got mouths to feed, mate. I've got mouths to feed.
There's only one person getting paid in this room, and it ain't you and me, Tom. Yeah.
Why are we having to do the podcast here? What have you roped me into later on today? That you've now pulled out of, but
good reason. We'll talk
I've
about
got
that.
A legitimate reason, yeah, so we'll come with that. No, so over the course of the last 2 weeks, we've held 30 community-based rugby events here because something real advocate for and the Welsh Rugby Union want to do is open up this place to the people of Wales, really, because essentially for large parts of the year it's unused. You know, we've got to maintain the pitch at different times and it's used for various concerts and different things because that basically is the funding model. But we've got a fantastic window of this 3 weeks where we're trying to basically get as many people through the doors to experience playing on here. So we want to make it reflective of all of our game in Wales. So we've had boys and girls playing here, men and women. We've had some touch rugby played here. We've got a National League finals, Judgment Day, and then tonight we're playing mixability rugby, so it's abled and disabled athletes on the field at the same time. So
what sort of disabilities will
all
have?
Sorts, so you've got mental disability through the physical disability, and it's what you do is there's modified rules around set piece and scrum and different things, and there's modified contact for those wearing bibs and
am I able-bodied?
No.
Okay, I think so.
You're playing in it, aren't you, Shanks? jokes aside, do you think you will be the best player there, or do you think that mixed ability with your knee and everything and your age is probably about right for you now?
My kids are coming to watch, so I'm going to have to put on a bit of a show.
Just nailing people, blindsiding people.
Well, it's the only, it's the only rugby I play now, so I play about three times a year this, and it's just enough content, it's just enough to make me feel really good.
Do you need a gum shield? That's my...
Yeah, with those teeth, you do,
Just that I'm cleaned as well.
It's just for everyone else's protection, to be honest, mate. Sight screen.
Just been to the vets, leave me alone. okay, right. Yeah, and I will have to perform a little bit tonight because I've got to put on a show for the kids.
I'm looking forward to seeing it, mate.
He's going full Quade Cooper tonight. You wait for it. Yeah.
You did have one good game in your, on you, though, Shanks, didn't you, all those years ago, against Ireland. I'll give you that.
No, surely it was against Japan or Italy. Surely.
No, I did.
You had one good game.
It's good four against the mighty Romanians.
Were you... Was he on the wing that day or centre?
Centre.
So Brian O'Driscoll wasn't playing.
They had a... Yeah, he was. They had a... I set up Gethin Jenkins' try as well. You forget about that. Not did I just set up Kevin Morgan to go under the posts to put the cream on top of the Grand Slam, but I...
I think you mean the cherry, don't you?
I think Eddie Butler says cream. I don't know.
Does he?
Yeah. Oh, I set up Gethin Jenkins for his try because he charges down Ronan O'Gara, doesn't he?
How did you set that up?
Because...
You said, charge him down, and he did.
We actually had the ball and I lost it out wide. Got it ripped out of my hand. Therefore, two assists. But yeah, still didn't win man a match. But
so you had a good game out here against. Were you at 13?
Guys, it's about Ryan.
Hang on. Were you at 13?
Yes.
Was Brian at 13?
Yes.
And you had a great game. Was Brian injured?
You say great. Is there a word that's bigger than great?
It was an epic, iconic performance.
Yeah.
What was so good about you that day?
I'm so humble. Broke the line every time I had the ball.
Made all the tackles. Brian will not listen to this. He hasn't got time.
He will.
This
will be the one he listens to.
Was you a bit of a handful for Bod that day? Were you?
I don't think we actually ran into each other, but you know, I just was.
You were the alpha, 13 like, channel alpha. You owned it.
I was like the knife, the cutting edge.
So, that's the cutting edge. Ireland must have had food poisoning or something. That's a cutting edge. That's a butter knife. That's a lump hammer.
But that was a big year for you as well, though, wasn't it? I mean, because you got capped there in the, was it the autumn in 2004?
2004 against South Africa. Yeah. So that was a great day for me until I woke up the following day and there was an article in the paper saying not cut out to play at this level.
Oh, really?
Me, yeah. after one cap.
Yeah. Do you remember who wrote that?
No.
All right.
No. So was it you? Yeah.
No, we'll kill him. I mean, we've got an agency. Everyone who joins up gets a bottle of brandy, a revolver, and some fingerless leather gloves, and we go around erasing people that one will miss.
Was it the England game? Then you came off the bench, or did you start the England?
Yeah, I came off the bench against England, and then played the other fixtures. Yeah. In 05, so which was pretty magic. Of all the experiences I had, I'm very fortunate to have been involved in a few Grand Slams. First one was the best because that sunny day in March against Ireland was just incredible.
The lead up to it as well was good, wasn't it? You know, we had Scotland the week before, and you know we'd hammered them at half time basically, and we were outstanding. Disrespect, you know, it was a really high score by half time, and then it was lovely weather. You wouldn't get weather like that in March now. Poof.
Oh no.
Just go back to that Scotland game. That was there was one of Wales's greatest ever tries scored that day.
It was. It was a bust from you, wasn't it?
Yeah, from deep in Wales's own half, from about 70 yards out. Yeah, started and finished by me.
Was that
the massive break you made?
Yes.
It's the only break I ever made.
Through Scott Murray, didn't you?
Yeah,
I think possibly. I was off the field that time. It was the only time I was ever off the field through it all. My lip was split, so. Doctor,
is that why you got a speech impediment now?
So prof had to stitch it up.
But I'm convinced. I call Shanks Lama. He's always been Lama on my phone because he's colouring, but also because he dribbles when he speaks a lot. Sometimes if he really concentrates, just dribbles. And was that post that lip injury or was that before that? Is that why you dribble that lip injury, or did you do it before?
I think it's probably stopped my dribble because it's it's a bit wonky.
Sewed it up, really.
Yeah. But it was. So out of the three Grand Slams.
Yeah, the first one was the best.
Yeah.
Cause everything from that bus ride in where we couldn't get through the droves of people and through the traffic, right through to all those tens of thousands of lunatics that came and watched the game on the big screens outside the City Hall and stuff. It was unbelievable. So only in Wales, really, with that. Well,
Grand Slams, box ticked. World Cups, not so much.
Well, we would have won that if it won for Sam Warburton, wouldn't we?
But sure, actually. Yeah, it goes. Everyone calls him like the king of Welsh rugby. Ruined it for everyone, didn't
he? It cost me a World Cup, yeah.
Yeah, and me. I mean, my mum was conceived in Pontypridd. That's the only reason I'd have claimed it. But it's mainly Sam's fault.
It's nothing
too
like
far,
his dad, mind.
It is mainly Sam's fault. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah, all right, we'll blame Sam.
Yeah, I openly tell him when I speak to him.
Yeah,
thanks a lot, mate.
Thanks for that, mate.
Could have changed my life, but you didn't.
And just before that, he took the captaincy off me as well. So a bit of a...
What he did was steal your future.
He basically did. He ruined my life.
Sold your pension. Single-handedly.
A Jedi.
You're retired by now, otherwise.
How do you celebrate a Grand Slam? How did you celebrate that night?
The first one was the best. I don't think we finished till Wednesday.
No,
so,
really?
Yeah,
do you remember we all went up to the Yard, wasn't it, in Cardiff?
Yeah.
The next day, we had a few beers local with sort of friends and family after the game, and then the next day was a Super Sunday, and we all went there. Everyone was there, all having a few pints. Michael Owen, who captained us that day because Alfie broke his thumb, turned up in his Reebok tracksuit, had two pints of Guinness, and left.
What?
And that's crazy for him, wasn't it? that was a big night.
He took me a protein shake, a fart bar, a protein shake.
That was a bucket list tick for Mikey Owen. But he didn't drink really, you know. It was nice to get him out.
Yeah.
He's probably going for a coffee and a walk around town then.
In his tracksuit.
Yeah.
Yeah, got his new contact lenses and boots.
Did he have his, I think he had his helmet tucked down his top as well, didn't he? A scrum cap.
Like loved that, didn't he? So then, oh wait, we went down to Swansea. I think you boys sorted that out, didn't you?
That's right, yeah. So, yeah, we've got to celebrate the good times, mate.
They
don't come around that often, so we did like a...
Well, did you have that planned? Would you have done that, if you planned a trip to Swansea after the game, would you still have done it if you'd lost?
Yeah, probably.
The group we had,
so
yeah.
So win or lose
on
the booze.
Yeah, it's a bit, you know, it's a long campaign, so it's about, you know, just having a few drinks together and relaxing.
I think that was part of the success, wasn't it? I think we were pretty good as a group, weren't we?
Yeah.
05. Oh wait, we'd been through a lot of you guys. I was fairly new to it in 05, but by the time we got to 08, you had a good group of boys who'd been on a pretty long journey.
Yeah.
You know, through this point of Rugby World Cup 07.
Similar age,
similar stage, and like with families and stuff. And then obviously you learn a lot from losing and highs and lows, and then obviously Gats coming in.
Yeah.
So it was a good time, really. It was a good time.
So how did you find out that you were going to be captain then? Because Gats come in and May.
Yeah, I took a phone call just after, between Christmas and New Year, driving between Pyle and Port Talbot on the M4. And I remember the phone going, and it was Gats on the phone. I'd know he was going to take over the role.
So you had hands free on though, yeah?
Yeah, obviously it was safe and legal to do so. Yeah. And he said, would I like to captain Wales?
He said, can I get back to you, mate?
I said, well, let me think about that, yes. Mm-hmm. And the only thing I remember of that was ringing my old man and old dear straight after, saying, you know, never guess what. So my old man's shouting and screaming, and so is my old dear and all that sort of stuff. So, but look at everything, you know, talk around where you're now today. There's only one bit I miss. I don't miss running around out there, getting smashed and hurt and all that. I don't miss lying awake late in the night.
Going into a brick wall.
Reviewing your game. I don't miss social media, and I don't miss papers, and I don't miss a training. But the only thing I miss is walking down that tunnel into a wall of noise and colour in front of 74,000 people.
Yeah,
just having the opportunity to play.
That's why I'm doing. That's why I'm doing the game today, mate.
it's probably impossible not to miss that, actually, isn't it?
I mean,
it's a high that such a tiny, tiny fraction of human beings will ever. It's a sort of adulation and acclaim and excitement that a tiny fraction of people will ever experience, isn't it? So, how do you not miss that?
Well, for me, it's probably the most alive I've ever been. So, you know, and to put it into context for people, you know, that patch of grass is 100 by 60. You know, that's the same as every rugby field around the country.
Yeah.
It's just a wonderful amount of history and heritage. There's 74,000 seats facing it. And that jersey you're wearing comes with a weight of a nation, really, you know. But to put that, you're physically alert, you're emotionally alert, you're mentally alert. So, you know, you're walking down that tunnel, and every sinew in your body is just on fire, you know, and you don't get that in normal life. You know, you could fail, you could succeed, and there's a vulnerability to it. Now, it's that raw emotion that you miss, and very rarely, like I said, do you get that having living a normal life now, as it were, 3.5 years out.
Yeah.
There's not a lot you can do, or not a lot of situations you can put yourself in where you experience the same thing. Hence why I do all these midlife crisis type exercise.
Yeah, so that leads us on to that. So the reason you decided not to play is because you've been a bit soft.
You can tell what his new hobby is by his watch, can't you? Look.
He's got DOM.
he's basically
got some DOMs in the leg.
Yeah.
Yeah, delayed onset muscle soreness.
Thank you.
Well done, scientist. Yeah.
No, golfer.
So you've run...
Yeah,
ran a long way, didn't you?
Yeah, I decided to do a marathon yesterday. So did the Newport Marathon.
Couldn't get in the London one.
One of the world's most iconic marathons.
Yeah, what's the route like? Is it scenic? Is it hilly?
So there was about 22 mile of it through country lanes with sheep and pylons and all that. So it wasn't quite the experience I thought it might. But it was a fantastic route. fast, it was flat, so yeah, so just what, like to have a little jog yesterday.
So what sort of, what was the longest? Oh, you've done an Ironman as well. So he's done an Ironman as well. So he's, you know.
Where was that?
I've done Wales twice. So definitely Tenby.
You know, we go out and buy designer clothes.
Yeah.
He does, you know, he goes and runs
Ironman
marathons.
And yeah, and do ultramarathons and stuff. And
so how do you go? Because you obviously as a forward, as an international forward, a big part of your physique is the physical demands surrounding your position, your job spec involve athleticism, but a lot of it involves bulk and weight and muscle.
Yeah, I was a man handler rather than a ball handler.
Yeah, exactly.
I was described.
Yeah.
But so look at his legs, though, mate. You know, he's got a male body on top of like some female legs. you shave them up and put a bit of tan on them.
Yeah, just like yours. You know. But you've gone from a world of repeated explosive power and static strength to ultra endurance. So were you always someone who was naturally really, really at an engine but had to work on being bulky enough, or did you just find that you love running? I mean, I can't imagine anything worse.
No, like there's a couple of things. Yeah, I was a guy that just tried hard. I don't even think I was that good at rugby. I just tried really hard. But on retiring, I went through the whole doing all the things that you're not allowed to do when you play, like we did do it when we played, but going on the pace during the week, eating what you wanted, put on a load of weight like Shanks has. And then I woke up one day I woke up one day and thought, it's not really for me, being pale and fat like Shanks. So I thought, you know, I got to do something about it. So I started doing a bit of exercise, no appetite to go to the gym, no interest in weights. That's not for me.
Strange, because you were like, you were powerful.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, but I just can't be bothered with it. So I fell in love, bought a bike, felt rather comfortable in Lycra, you know, and that sort of, and that sort of grew. And then a mate of mine sowed the seed of doing Ironman, and then realised that by being a bit lighter, and I probably have got a pretty good engine, and just sort of fell into it. So I've done everything from crikey, big long charity bike rides, I've done Ironman, done marathons, done ultra marathon. And
what's your favourite, like swimming, cycling, or running?
I hate swimming because I've had four shoulder ops, so I swim like a disabled athlete. I can't get this one arm out of the water.
Running circles.
So, like Nemo. So, but then cycling and running, I genuinely love. And I love like trail running and stuff, getting out running the roads is pretty crap. But.
Yeah. So you came home in the marathon in, was it 3:36?
Yeah, 3:37. Yes.
3:36 is better.
Yeah, I'll take 3:36. Yeah.
Okay, which is an incredible time. And you only have to sort of look at other ex rugby players. Like Shane ran it in London one in 3:31, 3:32, didn't he?
Yeah,
so he's half your size.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's about 45 kilos lighter than me. Yeah.
So what are you weighing in at now? Have you had to drop a load of weight to do this?
I think you'd still be massive.
Yeah, I'm still too heavy. I'm about 102-103 kg at the moment.
That's a lot if you're doing that distance. Yeah, that's a lot of weight.
Yeah, you do look like the freak in the pack as well. You know, so I'm stood in the pens waiting to start yesterday. And
like Gandalf for you.
Who's the big? Like the
he
honey.
He ain't gonna win.
It's like the honey monster running past people and behind.
I saw a social media clip of you crossing a line. Mate, you had some proper kit on as well.
You've got to look good.
Of course you have.
You had the sweatband. You had the sweatbands on the head. You had the
buff and glasses on.
You had a little belt on. I don't know if it's a utility belt or what.
Hydration belt. Mate.
Hydration belt. You got the sponsor stash you want.
Yeah,
that's it.
Did you run for a charity?
Yeah. So I set up a charity with a friend of mine a few years ago, the Princess Gate Trust. So we raise money and for kids and young people less privileged than ourselves. So just giving people an opportunity, really. So we do that. So all the events I do it wearing our kit and raise money where as and where I can. Really.
And he beat Hugh Bennett, which is
Benny did it, did he?
Hugh Bennett's ex hooker for Ospreys.
He's a unit. He's a big unit,
and he's now strength and conditioning in Wales. So part of his job is to keep fit.
But he's literally not as fit as some ex-players, which is a shame because he came behind you.
Yeah.
That's
a
shame. Well, I know he's an ex-player.
I mean, you obviously congratulate him when you see him at the end, but part of you thinking, bloody done you.
What you want is you want to get back, get your tracksuit on, get ready, and just like open a sandwich. And then when he gets back, it looks like you've been back for ages. I did the Bath Half Marathon a couple of years ago for charity, and I got signed up by a friend of mine who did it as a stitch-up and then told the Bath Chronicle him about it, so I could not do it. So I turn up, fat geezer with no training, ran the Bath, and I got back and Lewis Moody had already just finished. And I was like, when did you get in? He's like, he's off home. I showered everywhere. He's like, I'll be back an hour. He'd been back 59 minutes. That's on a half, mate.
Don't matter though, you did it.
Yeah, crushed it. Absolutely crushed it. Yeah.
You've got marathon to go now, though, that's it.
No, I won't be doing a marathon.
Really?
I won't be doing a marathon. No. Okay. No. It's just body type. You've got to know your limits. And I like weights, you see. I don't like cardio.
So
I like,
mind me, you'd be amazed what your body can achieve.
But I could say that about weights. You should do some weights. You'd love it. You'd love it. You'd absolutely love it. But yeah, have you got intentions to drop to 85 kilos and cut your times by 20 minutes?
Yeah, there's a few things I fancy doing. Because what it does do, it opens up like different... It's the nature of who we are. Once you achieve something, you want to push the boundary a little bit further. Now, like I've got, like all of us, you carry on a bucket full of backlist of injuries. And so I don't want to give into it. So I want to see how far I can go. So I keep saying to my wife, I don't want to give this body back in any great shape. So they can have it back when I'm dead and they've written it off, you know? So this is, and the more extreme, I'm doing an event now in 2 weeks, which is, it's a 40 mile ultra marathon, but it's 10 times up and down Penavan. So it's just,
sounds
boring and weird as that sounds. I'm actually really looking forward to it. So, but again, it's just slowly nudging
you've
the boundary.
Got that mindless, over and over again. You've got that mindless grunt in you, have you?
I thrive when it's just you versus you when you're staring down the barrel.
I went up Penavan about 6 months ago with the family, and I went up and it was fine. But coming down, my knee had to go sideways.
So much pressure coming down going through. Brutal on the quads. Yeah.
I might not finish, but I don't.
Yeah,
you know that's part of the action as well.
You know, you're gonna test yourself. You're gonna test yourself, aren't you? Yeah. Hugely. I'm just gonna buy some new golf clubs. You know, it's easy for me. That's what I'm gonna do. Spend some money I don't have.
Yeah, it's what you're doing.
So talk about memorable games here now. One that springs to mind is one that we lost, but the standoff that we had against New Zealand. The day we won the Haka. Now, I remember being in the Haka, watching the Haka, sorry. And, you know, you stood there and we knew, you know, we weren't allowed to turn and stuff. But all of a sudden, we're all linked arms, you know, arms around the shoulders, you know, stronger together like. And all of a sudden, you break rank.
We weren't holding arms. If you look at it, we're taking your own space because you're tougher on your own.
All right.
Well, I'm telling lies now.
I was touching Hibbs's finger with mine. but all of a sudden, you're going to Google it now, are you? You break rank and start edging forward and
shaking my legs.
Yeah. And we're like, we start turning into this V. It was amazing, wasn't it? We all got caught up in that moment.
Yeah, sports entertainment, right? At the end of the day, it is just a game, right? So these moments, pretty few and far between. And people still stop me in the street now. So as much as people talk about Grand Slams, the one thing they keep going back to is that Haka scenario. They loved it. You know?
And I say at the end, you know, and we won the game as well. So it was even better, you know, it worked.
Because they can't remember.
Yeah. You say it really confidently, they don't question you.
I've got it on YouTube now.
Okay.
Not great for our listeners.
No, but YouTube it. But Warren Gatland decided, well, he put it to us, didn't he?
Yeah, the night before. So obviously the night before a test match, you know, we're based out of the Vale of Morgan Hotel. And just before dinner, we all go down into the basement, which is a team room. So you forwards are talking around technical stuff, around scrums and lines and stuff. And people like you, Shanks, are talking about what shade of fake tan you're going to wear and all the backs.
So true.
Chat roulette.
We have a chat roulette. Oh, I did a brilliant one, I'll tell you that in a minute.
So you're all doing that. And then you're right, Gats put it to us, what are we going to do? And that was when it was sort of born. We didn't tell anyone about it, did we? Until the day. And the best one on there is the referee. There's one guy on there who didn't have a clue what was going on.
He was right in your ear, wasn't he, all the time?
Yeah, Ryan, take your team away. Richie, take your team away. And Richie's smiling and he's come over to me.
I'm watching it now.
And then he threatened to start the game with a penalty against us.
Did he?
Yeah, good luck with that. Didn't know which way
you
were.
Yeah, but it was... I mean, the theory behind it was that it was mind games, wasn't it? You know, it was...
Well, it's the world's biggest steering contest, you know. So when Gats explained that they go for a sort of moral, they go for that first psychological win by getting one of you to turn and walk away, you know. And then he said, "Well, what if you don't turn and walk away?" And
that was it.
That was great. That. You can hear the ref banging on. Yeah,
it's brilliant. You know, again, worth your listeners just googling it.
It was spine tingling, mate. And obviously, you know, we won the game as well, so it was even better.
I'll tell you what I'll do with this. Well, it's pre-pod. We're just recording it now, so Shanks will put this out later. It's Monday afternoon now, but I will share it now.
Okay.
And brilliant. I'll just tweet it now. I'm not very good at this stuff, believe it or not.
Well,
that's because you've got massive fat fingers, mate.
Yeah, I know.
He is good at it. He's just lazy. And he uses that as an excuse, like washing up.
All right, yeah, I've done it. It's on Twitter. It's on Twitter. There you go.
Okay, so...
how did the game go, by the way?
Yeah, we won.
Okay. 2-0 in the end.
So what...
I was going to ask one thing about being Wales captain. I know we're bouncing around, but who cares? It's our pod, isn't it? I always think that being captain of... or any country at your sport is a huge honour and a lot of responsibility. But when it's your national sport and it's by miles your national sport and it's kind of the sport of the people, so it is such an impassioned nation. I always think that there are certain countries where being captain is a bit harder. Like I would say that the standard of players that the All Blacks have had coming through probably, I don't want to offend anyone here, but I probably will, probably makes being All Blacks captain reasonably easy compared to being a captain of some other countries, you know. But I always think being Wales captain, apart from being, oh my, imagine being captain of the Welsh rugby team is bloody amazing. It must be a huge amount of pressure and you must be under the spotlight all the time. Was it like that?
Yeah, you're probably spot on. It's the esteem with which the position is held, you know. This, you've got First Minister, which was probably second to Welsh rugby captain back in order, you know. It is... the team and all is owned by the people, really, and they see it like that. So, you know, and we're not shy in coming forward with our opinions, whether it be appropriate or not, whether it be in your personal time or whether it be in your professional time. No, but you'd be really naive to go into it not knowing and expecting that as well. You know, not that makes it any easier.
You've seen it before, though, haven't you? You know, you've seen what's happened to captains before. You've seen sort of the press and the public get on the backs of, like, Colin Chavis when they caught a smile when he sat on the bench, remember, against Italy, and we lost that game, and he was smirking, and the press, I don't know for what reason, could be anything, someone could have farted, you know, but they caught that, and all of a sudden then he was just scrutinised, wasn't he? He was in a poll of hated people above Saddam Hussein.
What? Is that true?
Yeah.
Oh, my days.
But again, look, as long as you...
Oh my God.
I can't believe you dragged all that back up again. Amazing. But as long as you treat that position with the respect it's due and you try and conduct yourself with integrity, people are largely respectful of that, you know? Like, again, I'd never profess to be anything I wasn't. I try to do it my way, you know? And you just... As long as you conduct yourself in a right and proper manner, I think you can't go far wrong. But, you know, there is an obligation to go above and beyond with it as well, you know? So... But that comes with it, you know. You've got to be prepared to front it up, take the rough with the smooth. And don't get me wrong, I stood down there and lifted silverware as Wales captain. You know, and that, you know, we're all a slave to our generation as well. I was just fortunate I played among some good people and Shanks, you know.
Correct. So guys were good to have around, and ultimately there's room in the team.
We were able to carry 13 good players, me and you know, we can carry Shanks then. But
if that's my job, I'll take it.
So yeah, you know, I was fortunate enough to be involved with a team where, you know, we had some great people in the teams I played in. So, you know, people like Gethin and Adam, you know, fantastic rugby understanding.
Shane, Steve Jones, Hooky. You know, loads.
You know, Steve, you had a wonderful rugby understanding, and captaincy is like any other form of business management. If you surround yourself with good people and understand your weaknesses, you know, you can quite quickly navigate and find out how to make it work.
Who is your best back row then? Who did you prefer if you were eight?
You got to pick yourself.
Yeah. Your standard, captain and goal kicker.
Yeah, standard. Chef.
Look, I definitely have Nugget in there. You know, Nugget for me is one of the best rugby players I've ever, you know, his game understanding was just superb, you know. So, again, he wouldn't score massively on any of those fitness tests and all these sorts of things.
Gareth Edwards can hit the ball further than him in golf.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't imagine Nugget.
Honestly, really?
I can't imagine Nugget being much good in a squat rack either.
No, he's
on a bench press.
No, he wasn't, was he?
But no.
Unbelievably strong then when it came.
Like proper core strength,
like man strength, you call it. But you know, he had that in him, and you know, you watch the way he plays; it's just in
proper rugby strength.
And then the other one I play with is I'm a massive Tips fan, I am.
Yeah,
Justin Tips, such a wonderfully gifted rugby player. Like, there's just, that guy could play anywhere in the team apart from front row, really. He's genuinely got it all. But, you know, and then I was lucky enough to play with Toby as well, who'd be in there as well. You know, he's a guy who's fairly underrated. Really, you know, he's the type of guy that you only realise what he does when you're on the field with him at times. A lot of his work was unseen.
He's that weird combination of being really highly rated but still underrated.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And then because the guy's got... players, he's world class, and by that, he has world class moments in games as well, but he also does loads of work that you just take for granted.
You'd want to see a player cam on him, wouldn't you, just to actually comprehend how much he does. Yeah. Well, I find it a little bit strange that Tips went off with the sevens. I mean, do you have any inside?
No, I haven't got any inside knowledge on that. Other than I think he wanted to. You know, it's such a wonderful experience to go to Commonwealth Games.
Yeah,
and there's not many players that could have done it. You know, for him to go from being a professional 15s player on the back of Six Nations to win what 3.5 weeks, turn round, get up to speed, and
completely different type of fitness.
That's unbelievable.
Because the games are poles apart now. You know, it wasn't as though he'd been doing it on a secret from the summer.
You can't have one run now and sub yourself off, can you?
No. Yeah, don't have rolling subs in the Commonwealth Games. But and play a water bottle roulette.
Yeah, like you at Crosley Park when I was team manager.
All right.
Shanks made a massive break, scored a try, and he looked into the bench and he was like rolling his hands over each other, saying, "Sub me off, sub me off." Coach's like, "No, mate, you're staying on there."
You know when someone like blatantly is chasing you, but it's never going to catch you, but makes you run fast and you have to start zigzagging.
I remember Lynn Jones used to do that with Lee Byrne. So when he was coaching Ospreys, so Bernie could be a bit of a hypochondriac at times, and he'd get injured, and Lynn would be radioing down, "Nobody look at Lee Byrne, nobody look at Lee," so all the physios turn their back, on him.
Yeah. What was Lynn Jones like as a coach? Because you see him like on TV, and he looks a bit out there.
Oh, he's mad as a box of frogs, Lynn, but mercurial within it, you know. Yeah. Some of the conversations I had with him were just incredible. You know, the guy's rugby understanding
really
was second to none. He's probably one of the best coaches, and really innovative as well. You know, he looked at the game completely differently, and some of the stuff, you know, we talk around and all that were just incredible. His man management left a little bit to be desired, should we say. Some of the stuff that went on, it was incredible. I had team when I was captain of Ospreys, I had team selection meetings with, he'd put a meeting in the diary and then I'd get there and he'd call me in the loos and he'd be sat there with a cubicle door opening, taking care of his morning business, and we'd be picking a team for the weekend and stuff like this. But you know, this was years ago. But again, like I it's great that he's still in the game. He's coaching Neath now. But there's a well managed and position. You know, he offers something completely unique.
There's room for that.
He is one of characters. I could tell you stories about Lynn for not. Yeah. It's not appropriate for now.
Garth
Jenkins, you know, up there with.
But great rugby man.
Oh, really?
Great rugby man as well. You know, so.
One of the lads went for an interview at Ospreys to meet Lynn, and then that quarter of an hour into the meeting in his office, Lynn stood up and he was completely naked from the waist down. The whole week naked. He's in there with his agent and he pops over the corner of his office. He's got his balls out. Completely straight face. I love that.
Brilliant.
Just sign here if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, I love that. I love all that stuff.
But you had some really good success, didn't you, with Lynn and the Ospreys in terms of winning the Magnus League?
Yeah, we won. I think we won three championships with him, maybe, or certainly two. We, you know, we had relative success in Europe for a new team, and a really
good team, didn't you?
Yeah, the only problem we were still quite young. So when that sort of team of 05 through to 08 sort of disbanded, we were still only the core of the team, still only 27, 28. So you had Adam, Hibbs, me,
Duncan,
Alan Wynn, Duncan,
Mike
Phillips, JT, Lee Byrne, Hookie,
Shane, Tommy Bowe.
You know, so we were still probably the wrong side of 30. You know, look at, it's well documented now, win Europe, win World Cups, you're looking for a slightly more experienced team. And I think we went down, we lost in the quarterfinals of Europe twice, and we were probably one season, maybe two seasons away from actually genuinely fulfilling our potential, I think, on the big European stage. I think we didn't quite have that. We had success at national level and different stuff. I think for the club, we would still just establish ourselves as a real force in Europe. And it was great. You know, we'd go into outside of European Cup competitions and we'd be talked about a team that could certainly upset and would were likely to make the knockout stages, you know, regularly.
So what happened? The team disbanded because people just left and took deals?
The landscape of Welsh rugby changed. You know, obviously people's profile grew and cost of keeping those players just made it probably slightly uneconomical. And, you know, it was at the time where some of the financial constraints started coming in and different things. So, you know, it was just a shame that we weren't able to probably... I just don't think we quite fulfilled the potential of that squad, you know?
One thing I'd like to know is why they call you Jughead.
Should we just say I grew into these ears in later life?
Yeah. Your mum gave birth to ears with eyeballs.
Yeah, you know, I was pulled out by these. Yeah,
your ears just keep growing.
And your nose.
Yeah, you're going to have Terry Wogan ears, I reckon.
I don't want my nose to keep growing particularly.
You've got quite a small nose. Remember, I'd say more belly with you.
Yeah, I don't think my mum gave birth to a stomach. I think she might have given birth to like a bowling ball with eyeballs.
Yeah.
With some little inflatable arms and legs coming off.
A little bit stubble. But a little bit of news. So the rugby news is Donica O'Callaghan, he's retired now after an amazing, long...
Crazy career. Amazing.
Yeah. And it was really nice, wasn't it? You saw at the end with his kids coming onto the pitch. Three girls, one boy. But he's happy with that fourth as a boy, mate.
Oh, yeah.
But you know, he was one of these guys, he didn't drink, you know, but he was just the amount of energy he had and how funny he was, considering, you know, he didn't touch a drop of beer.
A great crack, was he?
Yeah, not like us. Where we have to have a couple of beers just to...
Remember the lads coming back off Lions tour and saying Donica O'Callaghan, like, star of the tour, what a bloke. Doesn't drink, but what a bloke. And you're like, how come he's always out with the boys and he was just a great crack?
Yeah.
How'd you do that?
Yeah, you've hit the nail on that. What a great character, you know. You talk about some of life's larger than life characters. He's one of them, you know.
Hugely.
He had great sense of humour, but he had real good integrity and values as well, Donica. You know, he was a proper gentleman as well, you know. But as you said, he's been an ever present throughout my career as well, you know. So for the 12, 13 years, you know, we had encounters, whether it be at Munster and international level. You know, and he was the ever present. You know, you talk around people who build a team around. You know, he's that iconic type character.
He's the only man I've ever seen take a line out in his pants.
Yeah,
remember his shorts got ripped, and he didn't want to.
There should be laws against that type of thing, shouldn't there?
But, yeah, they should. Yeah,
and again, it's probably a shame for him that he played in a era with Paul O'Connell as well. Because if it weren't for Paul O'Connell, you know, we'd have elevated him even further. You know, but. You know,
that's what I say about Gav Henson. Why can't I have just stuck with Andy Marinos at 12? Other bit of news, George North going to the Ospreys. Now, that shocked me a little bit. Because of the delayed... because of the delayed announcement of him signing for Ospreys. Because I thought he potentially might have been waiting for the Blues to see if they qualified for the Champions Cup next year. They obviously did. They've got automatic qualification, and I mean it's great signing for the Ospreys, but I thought it was a done and dusted deal at the Blues. Well, I assumed, but never assumed, do you? Because
you saw that Dickie Holland and Reece Blumberg had followed him on Twitter at the same time.
is that where you get your insight
the GM
from?
And CEO just followed him at the same time. It's like, okay,
something's up here. So, but great signing for the Ospreys, man, and good to have him back, isn't it?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, irrespective of where he's gone, it's just great having those characters back. We forget that George is still relatively young as well. Yeah. You know, he's achieved so much.
17 years old.
Amazing.
He's got 73 caps, hasn't he? Or 76 caps.
Yeah, at 26, is he?
Yeah.
I think, or,
what a joke. So that's more than Faletau, isn't it?
Be there or thereabouts.
I've had about 35, 40 caps at that age.
Lucky ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All off the bench. But yeah, that's incredible. Yes. But
again, you know, you look at, you know, where was he going to go? You know, I think it's a good match. You know, you look at the squad. I think the Ospreys were probably a bit more settled at the time. George was looking to, with all the talk that was going on around the Blues coach and all that type of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, again, the Scarlets. Could they attract him back? Would they want it? You know, they got such a, you know, they firing, aren't they? You know, so
yeah. Scott Williams, I think, was a big factor in George going to the Ospreys as well. They're good friends.
Good relationship as well. So, you know, I think it was one of three, and I don't think it was too much between.
But will he be centrally contracted?
Yeah, he's got a national dual contract.
Okay, so WRU doesn't decide where he goes, he decides, or is it a joint decision?
I believe so, I think. I think he.
So he doesn't get a phone call saying we are putting you at Ospreys, and that's that.
I don't actually know. That's a really good
question,
here,
mate.
Yeah, not.
How much is George North on?
a bit more than you're getting for this. I'd
yeah. yeah, net.
Like you, yeah. mate. We do it for love of the game.
Yeah, true enough.
David Pace.
Yes, the London Irish hooker has retired after nearly 300 games for Irish.
Wow.
It's a when I was playing, Pacey was a veteran, and he's one of those players that he's just been an automatic first choice pretty much. Not his whole career, because they had Nakadrotsky and whatever at London Irish, but the Springbok. Robbie Russell, the muscle. Not called that because of his biceps. His biceps are fit in a bucket, his muscle. Anyway, so Pacey's just been there for so long, and he's one of those guys that, I don't know, people say that loyalty's gone from the modern game. It's not. There are examples when loyalty's gone, but actually Pacey is a good enough player to have moved, and I say this respectfully, to a club that's more likely to be near the top of the league. But he's one of those guys that stuck in and stuck in and stuck in. I played a ton of times against Pacey. He's a really, really good player, really underrated player. And I find it wonderful he's had such a long career in hooker in such a tough place, but also hard that his last game for Irish is on the weekend where they get relegated. You know, I mean, that's pretty brutal, isn't it? After all those years, they go down on a Sunday and he happens to be playing his last ever game for the club. It's like, bloody hell, poor but yeah, great career.
Foul Felice retiring. I think
what?
That is his last game. Yeah, I know.
Tell Foul for retiring?
Yes.
Come on,
I
lazy.
I believe that when I see it. He'll be around somewhere.
With gold teeth. Gold grill.
All I want to do is see his birth certificate to actually clarify how old he is.
He doesn't know how old he is. We used to ask him all the time. He's a different answer every time.
If you could touch your shoulder with the other hand, you're a certain age.
He would not tell us. He used to change his date of birth whenever he told us.
But what an incredible player he's been. Loves Kentucky Fried Chicken and Nando's.
Yeah, loves it.
That's all he goes on about. Used to have the tongue corner with him and Mama Molotika. Real quiet guy, but what a servant he's been. He's the most capped regional blues player that there's been.
Oh, really?
And I hope he stays within the game, and he stays and possibly maybe
his boy
do something with Cardiff, because it'd be a shame to lose someone so iconic like him.
It's funny, what'd you get him doing? Because he doesn't say anything.
He'd just be like Forrest Gump mowing the lawn, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Not that you have to mow a 4G pitch, but you have to sweep it.
I tell you what, Ryan, when I was there were two loose heads at Bath, it was me and Dave Barnes, and we signed this guy called Foul Felice from Tonga. And he arrived, and it was like, he was about 26 then, mind. He was, or whatever he was then, and this was years ago. He arrived and we all go to the change rooms to get changed, and I carried a bit of timber, but I was a big unit, lifted a lot of weights, reasonable nick. Barnsley was lean, not a huge prop, but good nick. Foul came in, and I remember him being 126 kilos, and yes, 126 kilos, which was big, like 6'2", 126, gold teeth, veins in his calves, veins in his biceps. And they measured him and he was 11% body fat, and they re-measured him and he was 9% body fat a couple of weeks later. We're like, holy shit.
I mentioned this before, like when he's training, though, he trained quite a lot within his limit, especially weights, because he was big. Anyway, he was doing bench press, and one of the strength and conditioning coaches said, mate, that's not enough, you've got to put some more on. So he goes and puts another 25 on each side, you know, just like...
Yeah.
You know, 5 or 10 kilos max, but he'd put another 50k on the bar and still lift.
But it was funny. So we could
never find out how strong he was.
Yeah, the boys were telling me with him, didn't they? Used to tell him different weights, so he'd think there was like 100k on the bar. And
yeah,
he'd have like 140 on there.
We used to with him at Bath. Weirdly, same things. It was like, how strong is this guy? So the props would be in a weights group together, and I was always much better at weights than I was at rugby. So I was decent. I wasn't amazing at weights, but I was good in the gym. And I would be doing sets. We had 60 kilo dumbbells and a seated shoulder press. And I was doing sets of six, not comfortable, like battling on the last couple of each set, but five sixes on 60.
Not going all the way down.
And then all the way down, and then Foul Foul.
Using his legs.
Yeah, and then Foul Foul would come
and
in.
And elbows on the way up.
And he'd be like, oh, how many? We're like, 12, mate, 12, we'll go to max. But he gets like 11, he goes 10, 11, you're like, never finish on an even number. Okay. So 30, I remember him doing 5 sets of 15 on 60s, and I was the strong guy. I was like, holy shit. But then we were like, "This, we've never heard of this guy. He's not young, he's like mid-20s, like mid-25, 26. We've never heard of him. He is a physical freak, and he used to run to the gym up the hill and everything, like, what are you doing, mate? And then it was like, if he was any good, he might be big and buff in the gym, but if he was any good, he's dominated pre-season, we would have heard of him. So he's going to be rubbish. He's going to be one of those lads that's got all the kit, but he's rubbish. He played tight a few times, didn't really enjoy it that much. We were quite happy with that. He moved to Loosehead and was suddenly the best player at Bath. We were like, holy shit. It's like playing against Cobus Visagi and getting my head shoved up my arse. Foul came on and he ran on taking Loosehead and he was like, oh, he didn't know where to put his arm and stuff. He's like, Binder, okay, you go first. Yeah, fine, with the other guy. Hits and just like has absolutely no problem at all. I was like, my career is over. This bastard has arrived. Anyway, he got offered loads of money to play tight end for Cardiff. We never saw him again. Yeah. After 1 year he was there, literally Cardiff, that signing rescued mine and Barnsley's careers. We'd have had to leave the club. He was so much better than we were.
As well. So Judgment Day was played here at the weekend. I take it you were here. I wasn't. I was off on a charity golf trip, but I can't bother to explain that.
No, I wasn't here, actually.
Oh, you weren't?
No, I wasn't. I was at home with my kids.
Why weren't you?
What?
Because I came to the real Judgment Day the day after, National Finals Day.
So. Oh, okay.
I saw you on social media sitting with a beer, weren't you? And non-alcoholic beer, chilling.
No, I didn't. I watched Judgment Day from the telly. It's the first one I haven't been to. So.
How many people attended, do you know?
Well, there's somewhere in the region of 60,000.
Okay, decent.
You know, obviously, it's over two games, so the people are in and out. But it's a format that people are really buying into, you know? Yeah. So I think it was the second highest attendance.
So those who don't know about Judgment Day, it was the four Welsh regions play in one day here. It was the Scarlets and Ospreys first. No, Scarlets and Dragons first, and the Ospreys and Blues the second game. They do it every year, but it's always quite hard to find a date, isn't it? Because with Judgment Day, you want your stars to play, don't you? Because you want, you know, get a big buzz around rugby and around Welsh rugby. And just the way it played out, there's a few players rested because of competition still going ahead.
Yeah, it's a concept that works, you know.
It does work.
I think it was largely picked from our friends at the RFU, you know, around the fixtures they run at Twickenham. But what we see is Cardiff's a fantastic venue to host anything, really. So people come and they get caught up on the, you know, the whole day out, the trip. You've got the bars, you've got the town, you know, and the venue itself. It's also accessible to a different audience at times, to, you know, some of the national games, and, you know, we see some more different family type atmosphere and stuff. So all that's great. But your points are prevalent, Shanks, in the fact that, you know, you have to put the date out there early. You know, Easter was early this week, and May Bank Holiday's late, so it's fallen on the weekend in between. You know, it'd be ideal to have a bank holiday weekend, but also you know you can't cater for
Where a team is in the league.
Yeah, you know, where a team is in the league. The Blues are qualified for Europe. So,
already, you know, they've got the final against Glock. Yeah, you can't.
So, you know, but every now and then, circumstances are going to say that you're possibly not going to have the spectacle you want, you know. But all in all, I do think they're in excess, irrespective of sometimes some of the rugby you see. You know, the actual event itself is becoming part of the calendar.
And
really, you
saw a lot of tries, a lot of good rugby. The Scarlets pretty much destroyed
the Dragons
first up, and then it's a real close game, real good game with the Blues and the Ospreys, and Dan Bigger nails a drop kick at the end.
Of course,
just to see
what you pay all big money for, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
big bucks.
That's
it?
Why Northampton.
Just to see how he goes Northampton next year. You know, he's the type of guy that you could put a long term plan in place, really, to start build a team around. Because as much as it's the criticism he gets,
He's so solid crew, isn't he?
He's so solid. His game management is excellent, you know, and I think he'll thrive in that prep.
I just really hope for Northampton's sake that I'm not going to say spend a bit of money because that's too easy. If they got some work to do in this off-season, there are coaches leaving, they need to recruit, they need some fresh blood in there, and I just hope he's got the players around him. Cobus Reinach at nine, who is just brilliant, a sensational player, so he'll be great for Dan Bigger.
Yeah,
but
I agree.
I really hope that, you know, Luther Burrell, if he's playing 12, if he's on form, he's been great this season, he's been on form. So if they got the players around Bigger, he'll have obviously, without saying the blinding obvious, he'll have a much better chance. But I really think he could be great for them.
Yeah, because he'll put you in the right position, you know, and he's worth 12 points a game, you know. So he's a 90% goal kicker, you know, he's world class.
Just before we get into the Aviva results, we won't go through too many because I know it's been quite long already. Johnny Gould just wants to say that his team, I think they're the under-15s, they're Wilts, and you do a scrummaging session with them.
Caution. Caution under-15s?
Caution under-15, yep. Wilts. They played in a fight. They won 20 points to 7.
They're a hell of a team.
They scored 4 penalty tries.
From the scrum?
No, it could be 4, could it? Because you know you've got to kick conversions as well.
3 penalty tries from the scrum.
I made that bit up, yeah. But what I'm trying to say is that
good prep, Shanks.
It's just hips and grips, isn't it?
What I'm trying to say is that you played a huge factor in that, because every year you go down there, you give them a scrummaging clinic.
He calls it the Flatters Scrum Factory.
Yes, what he calls the Scrum Factory. He wanted me to mention it.
Oh, good lad, Johnny.
So
Johnny Gould, hell of a boy.
Yeah.
Red League coaching rugby out of him, yeah?
Yeah.
You must have heard of him doing the auctions, Johnny Gould.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he was at this event, Grocery Headers at the weekend, and he did the auction. He was just...
We've said it about 10 times. Pod, there's just, mate, no one like him.
He knew everyone in the room. You know, he played people against each other. It was phenomenal. But he loves his rugby. His son's very much enjoys rugby. I think they're under 15.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to mention that. So well done you, David.
Hey, God, stop it. I should have been a coach.
Giving a bit back, mate.
But nice.
That's what it's about, isn't it?
It's nice to see you back on the box. I mean, you had a week off last week, didn't you?
Yeah.
Surplus to requirements.
Yeah,
but you're back where you belong.
Yeah. Was I missed, do you think?
I've not watched the highlight show yet, but...
Well, it's not until tonight, so you can't watch it yet.
Yeah.
Will you?
I will watch it. Of course I will, mate.
Slag you off a bit.
Yeah.
Slag you off a little bit.
You
it was an interesting weekend in the Aviva, actually. So
why was it interesting?
Well, Bath against the last Premiership round, we just smashed the bits at Sarries and kind of... Ben Urbano played pretty well. Alid Brew was outstanding, as he has been all season. But
one player's player of the season.
I know. So
honestly, right? I know you're a busy man and you're not. You can't watch every minute of your Premiership, but I watch all the Prem games, and he has been one of the standout wingers in the Prem. He's been absolutely brilliant. So he was great a couple of weeks ago, but everyone else had a shocker. Poor old Reece Priestland, Paul Grayson described it as a waking nightmare against Sarri. And I'm sure it happens to every fly half. It's much easier being at prop where you can just hide. You can't hide at 10. This weekend against Gloucester at King's Home, Priestland was really, really good. They were all really good. Alid Brew, brilliant again. And they smashed Gloucester at King's Home, which was kind of unexpected. So that was interesting. But the real story at the moment is, you could argue that Leicester potentially not making the playoffs is going to be a big story next week. But Newcastle, with a round to go, have qualified for the semi-finals, you know, and it's...
It was a good Leicester team as well, you know. Tuolangi was back. Tamu has been brilliant all season.
You got Big Genji playing, and like the last two games at home, Leicester have been properly at it. They've actually played well. The crowd is flat out, full atmosphere, full throttle, and they've lost against two really good teams. And
yeah,
Newcastle making the top four with a round to go is a lovely story.
Now, I remember Gonover when he was at Leicester, and I remember, you know, he's a big player, he's strong, he's fast, but I don't remember him having the impact that he's had for Newcastle this season. We've talked about him a lot on the podcast this year, but again, phenomenal off the base of the scrum.
I mean, Alid Brew's had a hell of a season, but there's no winger like Gonover in the Prem.
His lateral movement for a big bloke, you know, to be able to step sideways, you know, it's for big blokes, it's quite difficult to step a lot of the time because there's a lot of weight behind it, but he is immense.
I mean, I think it's bigger than that, though. We were talking earlier off the microphone, but it's great for the game, though, isn't it? That it's new faces, new club at the business end, because at the end of the day, we've got to keep the game current and we've got to keep it attractive to as many people as we possibly can. And whether it be football, rugby, or any other sport out there, seeing new people knock on the door and crack the age old. You know, sport's about jeopardy, isn't it? You know, it's about the unknown, it's about the new, it's about that journey. And you know, every now and then, we love an upset, we love an underdog, and you know, to your point as well, they're a team that played with confidence this year. It hasn't always been pretty, and you know, but they've managed to get results as and when they need to, which is a great league way of playing. You know,
you can't play
champagne rugby all year round.
They signed Matavesi from the Ospreys as well.
Yeah, he's been really good for them. Do you know what? Since he turned up, I think I'm getting this right, because I spoke to him last week. I was up at Newcastle in the week with Dean Richards, and I spoke to
Tweet us if it isn't right, because you tweet us about the pound coins that you can change.
By the way, he was wrong. You can't. I investigated that.
You can't.
So Joshy, well, he was in the academy when I was at Bath.
I've investigated it. Quite Poirot.
I know. Joshy, when he arrived from Ospreys wanted him as heavy as possible, is what he told Newcastle. I said I reckon that's balls, because no one's ever said that. Whatever your body fat count, we just want you as heavy as possible. No one's ever said that in sport, unless it's sumo. So anyway, he arrived
there. I think that was Wine Street effect.
He has, since he arrived, he's still a big unit, mind. He's lost 20 kilos, and he's still over 100 kilos. Like, he was like prop weight, big prop weight when he arrived there. But he's playing really well for them, really well.
They lost Hodgson as well in the game, which...
Yeah.
Obviously, he's going to throw them out a little bit.
But they put Soshino to 10, who had a good game but kicked really poorly. So right at the end, they just subbed on Takalua because they thought there might be a key penalty coming up.
He did nail one right to the touchline in the middle for a lineup. But, and then Ali Hogg, who I didn't realise he's still playing. I did obviously realise he's pretty old now.
He's still got it.
Yeah. He scores a try, but you don't see the actual try he scored because they give it the first time, I think,
yeah,
before the ref blows up. Anyway, but a great win for Newcastle and in the playoffs.
Hella win. Really interesting, the semis coming up. Shall we... We should have some questions. We've got some questions online, yeah. Tommy. Here's one for you, Ryan, from Andrew Thomas on Twitter. During your career, who hit you the hardest? That can be a tackle or a punch, whatever you want, really.
Ooh, who hit me the hardest? Carl Eamons.
So remember, did he?
Remember doing one of those... Remember when all that sort of nine would run across the field and do that pop to a forward running like an Enders line from somewhere outside 12 when that was all the rage? Well, I remember doing one of them.
The Jamie Roberts line.
Jamie Roberts.
Big Carl was waiting for you, was he?
At the Liberty, I just thought, if I'm fair play, I'm flying, yeah? And Carl Eamons didn't move. And I thought I was going to hit him. My God, I've never been hit so hard. So I give him everything as well. So led with the elbow. Hit him, pick me up.
He's one of those guys that when people talk about Carl Heyman, they say he was very big and he was a great scrummager. But actually, even when he was at Newcastle, I played against him a few times, he was huge, but very, very mobile, like crazy mobile, and a real talent. So like, I remember we did a certain kickoff and we had a back row called Andy Beattie at Bath, and he was a big old horse and he was great at carrying back off kickoffs because he never got tackled behind the game line because he was just awkward and big and quick.
Beast.
Yeah, and in three kickoffs in a row, Big Carl was there, and no one melted Beast. I only saw two people ever melt Beast. It was Carl Heyman, and right towards the end, Stephen Ferris. Nobody ever melted Beast because he was just like a wardrobe. And Heyman hit him three times, and Beast, remember Beast shouting, "Can we do another kickoff, please? Can we try something else? He keeps nailing me." Yeah, not a bad idea.
The other one was George Harder. Do you remember him?
Oh yeah, Quinn's winger.
So
yeah, he was a tough guy.
First time I played Quinn's in 2003 or 2004. They used to do this move where nine would pop to him, coming short off the back of a scrum. He'd have like a 20-yard run at to do it.
Yeah.
So we knew they were going to do it. So they did this play, and I stepped up from eight, stepped out, and he bounced me. So I did the old backwards roll, spat me out the back. Oh. Look, he did fall over. I remember we had a young 10 then, a kid called Matthew Jones, who ran past me, laughing, right, tapped me on the ass and said, and ran off. So next play was a line out. So he did almost exactly the same move off the line out. They did a line out maul and they popped a George Harder off nine, who ran straight over our Matthew Jones over 10 and scored a try. So yeah, I followed him up by running a little tap on his ass. Go on, next time. But yeah, those two. Yeah, at least I did stop him.
Stead is on Twitter. How much do you earn a game for Bristol? Too much.
Is he suggesting that you had it well paid but you didn't play many games? Is that what he's saying?
Well, I don't know what he's saying there, but we don't even have to answer. It's just a crap question. Benjamin Smith saying, why did he run away from him and his mate during the Newport Wales Marathon? I don't know if you know that guy. But
here you go, Daffod Evans. If everyone is fit, what should be Wales' starting back row? Now, I'm going to guess what I think yours will be.
Go on then.
I think you'll say...
Hold on, you're asking the question.
I'm going to guess. I'm going to say Faletau, Tipperick, and I'm either...
No, not either.
Hang on.
Pick it. Don't, not either. You're picking it. You've got Tipperick, you've
Warby.
Got... Okay.
But you might go Navidi or you might go Ellis Matey Boy. But anyway.
No, I'm. There's a couple of things here. I'm really intrigued to see how Sam Obden comes back because I think Sam's been really. He's got an opportunity to reinvent himself. And I genuinely do think the game has evolved in the last sort of 12, 18 months. That it'd be great, you know, if Sam comes back maybe a little bit lighter, a bit more mobile. You know, I think the game is going that way now. It'd be interesting to see.
To play six or seven now.
Well, this is the thing. I think he'll come back as a seven.
Okay.
The other one, is Moriarty. Now it'd be really. Yeah, now he's coming back. Now I'm a big fan.
Love
of it. I think I think he brings a physical presence.
He's a header. He's an absolute header.
Yeah, that we don't really have. We don't have too many of them in Wales.
That came against England out here.
Yeah. Oof. So, I would probably go Moriarty, Faletau, and then. Jury's out, as I said. I'm a massive Tips fan.
Because you still work for the Dora,
but I'm a big Warby fan as well. I think between the two,
you can have four or five in there.
Thanks,
Rodri Gravel. What's tougher, Ironmen or WRU training camps?
Oh, remember we went to Poland?
No, I didn't go to
you
Poland.
Didn't, oh, you were gone then. Pre Rugby World Cup 2011.
Phased out by then, weren't you?
Gone. You're probably in there. A couple of seasons too long
in
as
the real
it was,
world.
But
in the real world,
7 or 8 seasons.
Pre 2011, we did 20 odd days
doing Q&As every day.
I ran up to it, and that was pretty bleak. That's so
terror. Yeah, that's a long time in Poland. Most people do a week, 5 days in and out, don't they?
Yeah, we went twice. So give me Iron Man any day.
This is a nice one, by the way, from Bart. It's not a question. Bart Chris just says, no question. Just wanted to say how big an admirer I was of Ryan's. Great player, top bloke. Very nice message, Bart. Thank you very much. It's not true, but
Napa has put on here. Serious question now. How many cigarettes do you think Shiro smoked in 3 seasons of Gamora?
Yeah, it's a great question. Gamora?
No.
Oh, you've got to watch it.
It's on Sky. It's Ricky Gervais's favourite,
right?
Which means it's ours. It is. Yeah. Gamora is a brilliant TV show. It's absolutely brilliant.
Paul Barry. I don't know if you know him. Ryan is.
I used to live with Paul Barry.
All right. Is a tattoo on his arm, a cornetto, or Mr. Whippy?
Yeah.
There you are. Have a look at that. There you are.
Look at that. Oof.
Oh wow, that is
it's amazing, eh?
I don't want to offend anyone. That is a proper Welsh tattoo.
he's a Super Maori.
So the Maori brothers.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's cornetto.
We've had that. Any other questions for that? So have you given
that? No, that'll do for me.
Yeah, thanks, lads. Insightful as ever.
I know. I actually spoke to my dad on the way over by here. He asked me to. I said, "Have you got any questions?" My dad's a really bright bloke, you know. And I said, "Don't ask me anything unoriginal. Think of something original by the end of this phone call." And by the end of it, he said he wants to know who the best number 8 you ever played against was. I was like, well, Dad, that is
amazing.
Like an unoriginal question, but who was it?
SQ. Scott Cornell, yeah. Like again, for 2 reasons. A, you know, he was a hell of a big bloke, and at the time when he played...
He was a freak.
And B, he was a bit of a hero of mine, so lining up against... And having that padded forearm in the face was nice in a walk.
And see, you employ him here in the stadium to do... to host the lounge.
Yeah, he works for me as well now.
Yeah, exactly. And we've got to mention Will Carlin's tweeted because he's on us all the time about mentioning him, and you know he's trying to reinvent himself a little bit.
He's trying to stay current. That's why he dyes
his
hair.
Like mentioned, Sam was. when he runs, why does he wear a leg warmer on his head? Or has he gone
buff, William? No, that's in response to I called him out on social media the other day because I saw him with he was out cycling with his friends with essentially a helmet the size of a dustbin on his head and must have been a triple XL chin strap as well. So
I think he's trying
to get his own back.
All the Queen's men.
Last question, Andy Lillington wants to know again. This is on Twitter. How sickening was it to keep losing playoff finals at Bristol? It's a good question because it took a while, didn't it? And by far, you were the better team.
You just couldn't
seal that playoff victory, could you?
So I was involved in two playoffs. I arrived just before the playoffs in the first year. The Ospreys let me go a little bit early, but I broke my leg in the first game against. So I played in the semi. Broke my leg in the first leg of the final. Then so.
Put your leg in the first leg.
First leg, yeah. There's a lot of legs in that sentence. So so that was a nightmare on two levels. It was a disappointment for a club that actually is a Premiership club. You know, the standing, the infrastructure, you know, the ambition around it. There's 1.5 million people live in Bristol, and it talk about rugby being in a part of the community and culture of a place, and that's true in Bristol. It's a fantastic club. They retain a lot of the old values of rugby as well in a modern way. So that was great, and then. Obviously, to go through the disappointment then with Worcester again, it was the first leg of that playoff final. I was when I did my shoulder again, and I had to have an operation and different things. So I missed the second leg and go through that disappointment and see that, you know, to be involved with a group of lads that had been through it on 2 or 3 cycles was just demoralising because the work put in, you know, warranted promotion to win the league comfortably 2 years in a row. It just didn't seem a right and proper. System really, but
change now, of course,
it has changed, which I think is right, you know. And now they've got an opportunity to go and establish themselves in the Prem, which is great,
yeah.
Good on them. Before we go, firstly, thanks very much, Ryan. Really enjoyed it. I can see now why they call you Jughead in the flesh. The more weight you lose in the marathons, the bigger your ears look. I'm trying to get a bit of weight off my quads actually, just for anyway. Just want to mention one thing. So, Rob Horn, the Australian centre playing for Northampton. I was commentating again a couple of weeks ago. First hit, he makes a big tackle, and he's genuinely had a horrible injury. I think he finds out days after that game that he's having to retire. Horrible nerve injury in his right shoulder / neck. Big problems with his right arm. They don't know quite the extent of it, but he might have severed a grouping of nerves that might mean that his right arm never comes back. You know, so really, really horrible. So he's in a pretty dark place, and it'd be nice to know. It's very, very sad, but it's a rough old game. So
I'm sure he's a massive fan of the podcast. I know he's not, but a couple of Saints boys listen to it. So
yeah.
We're thinking of Rob and everyone at Saints. There's just a wonderful bloke, clearly a great player, but very, very sudden, in at his peak, dominating for Northampton, playing some great rugby, captaining the side as well at times, and just gone, absolutely gone. One tackle, first tackle of the game at the derby at Welford Road a couple of weeks ago, and he's gone forever from rugby. So very, very sad. We're all very lucky to be part of it, and I'm sure the community will get round him and help him out.
Well said, David. Well said. Sorry we didn't go into too much detail on the rugby side. I mean, if you do want to listen to more detail, tune in Channel 5 Monday night.
Which is tonight.
So
by the time you listen to this, it was yesterday.
Yeah, but you can get it on My5 online, where you get Flats' thoughts, not mine, but if you know, maybe start a petition off, try and get me on there as well. All right?
Budgets, mate.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Ryan, thanks so much.
Quid two ways.
Taking your time.
Cheers, Ryan. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye.